CBS Radio Sports and the Baltimore Orioles welcome you to this special presentation of the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan. An hour-long look at baseball offseason transactions, player trades, deals, and the upcoming Orioles baseball season. Now, live from Dempsey's Pub at Oriole Park, here's the Hot Stove Show with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles, 105.7 The Fan.
Everyone, we are at Dempsey's at the ballpark, and Rock Kabatko is a short timer. Two more shows before he heads to Florida. You're going to be there so long this year because of the WBC. Are you considering becoming a resident of the great state of Florida, you know, to help you possibly with the income taxes?
I should. Everybody else seems to be doing it. I don't want to jinx it, but I think I have a shot at getting out of here without a blizzard. Usually there's like at least that one blizzard or two storms before I head south. Boom. Fingers crossed.
Wait,
I may have a shot.
Us.
I know,
yeah,
totally.
All right, we have a real good show tonight. Oliver Drake's going to join us in a little bit. But right now, we're going to go right to the phones and welcome in Adam Jones, who was a big fan favorite over at FanFest the other day. And I know he had a good time because every time I saw him, he was in a good mood. Adam, it's Jim and Rock. How are you?
I'm doing. How are you doing?
We're doing very well. Now, I was looking today, and I thought this was the case. You're the longest tenured Oriole. Now, you're still not even 32, but with that, I think, comes some responsibility, and you seem to really take to that being a team leader. Do you enjoy being in that position on this team?
Well, I mean, I do, but I'm not at it alone. I mean, JJ is obviously a great guy to lean on, more time, you know, 2 years older. O'Day, another guy, guy to lean on, a couple years older, a couple years less in service time. So I let him know that sometimes when he wants to step out of line. But, you know, I got a great group of guys that go out there and lead themselves by example, who came, especially the guys who are 30, around that age, they especially different organizations we came from. We've respectively have came from organizations that had good veterans, you know, on their way out, but still taught us pretty good values and stuff like that going forward, you know, in our own careers. And it's fortunate that we've obviously been successful in our own individual ways, but we've been able to get back, you know, the knowledge because we've been successful in our own ways that people do take a heed to what we're saying. So it's, you know, it's a collective group, but it's good to be at the head of that group.
Now, last Saturday at FanFest, when we were on stage together, a fan asked you about maybe other players that would be added. And you said, well, first and foremost, they have to be able to play for Buck Showalter. If they can't, they won't be brought here. Is what you just described in large part a result of that Buck knows the type of players, A, that can play, but B, can blend together to be that team you just described?
Well, I mean, yeah, I've said that for a few years. I mean, I've, you know, obviously Buck does his scouting report, and I do my scouting report. I mean, I was signed a 6-year deal here. You don't think I'm just going to just lay down and just go play? Nah, I'm invest my time, my family, my, you know, all my resources in this city. So you don't think I'm going to know what's going on at the office? So I know what it takes to play for him. And I've seen players go and come. I've seen a lot of different things, some things good and some things bad, some things fortunate, some things unfortunate. So, you know, you learn your workplace, and I think that I've learned my workplace well enough, especially in Baltimore, to know that, you know, I know who can play for Buck and know who can't, especially going around the league and playing against other competitors. I know other managers also, but I know who can play for them, who can't. And, you know, some people can't, and that's just no slack on anyone else. It's just, that's just how it is. Some managers are different, and, you know, we still got the old school guy, and some people don't want that.
I think it makes sense.
I mean, it sounds like he's starting Slaughter or something like that, but it's not like he's like that, but it's like he's like that.
To kind of piggyback on Jim's first question, you talk about leadership. Do you think it's good to have the mix of personalities among the leaders? I mean, you are certainly more of the vocal leader, whereas a Mark Trumbo, once he resigned, the guys I talked to said he's so valuable. They all said the same thing. He's more of a quiet leader, and I think maybe Wieters was kind of viewed that way as well. Kevin Millar back in the day was more vocal. Cal Ripken was more of a lead-by-example guy. Do you think it's good to have that mix?
Well, Trumbo was a guy who came in and, you know, knew, obviously being around the league, knew guys respectably, you know, just doing competition, and just slowly blended himself into the team. And then now he's going to be here for 3 years. So now I think he's, you know, he'd opened up his personality for sure. But I think now is he can be even more open because he's going to be here for a while. And that's just, that is how it is, you know. California dude, like me, and he's, you know, in the Rock, like a few people, but, you know, so... You know, he got himself comfortable the way he did, which is great because within our team and our clubhouse, as both of you have seen, you know, it's pretty easy to get comfortable in the clubhouse because we just have a good blend of everything. When it comes to, you know, music, movies, any sort of thing, you're liable to hear any sort of thing on any given day or any conversation, talk about anything. And it's just a general, you know, we just generally have a good time. It's really like a country club. It's, anybody belongs to any. Hunter, I'm sure you belong to one.
I belong to a few clubs, but they're not in the country. But anyway, hey, how important do you think it was to bring back Mark? I mean, obviously, you know, led the majors in home runs, but beyond that, just the fact that, you know, not bringing back Nelson Cruz a couple years ago and how that's turned out, how important was it to get Mark back here and not let him walk as well?
Well, I mean, if you're not surprised that you got him back, I don't know what it is. I mean, a few years back, the stats he put up, he's getting, what, 4 or 5 years, you know, upwards of $18 to $22 million a year or something like that. You know, times have changed. I mean, the metrics and all that stuff, how they're calculating all this stuff is really going into how they're paying people, and it's, you know, it's crazy. Yeah, on how it is, you know, free agency the last few years has been different. You go into it. I mean, I think players myself, you know, talking to friends and all that stuff, thinking that guys are going to get this and that, and they end up signing for something completely different, 1 year or 2 years, and you're like, wow. And the market is really, really crazy. It's transcending because they're starting to see value in a lot of other things. Billy Beane's way of thinking and all that stuff is really being implemented to a lot of franchises, and believe it or not, is working in certain ways, I believe. But in the day, you still have to spend some money in some sort of way. So I think that Dan and Buck and Peter, I think they're all happy that they got him at this price.
Now, Adam, you're going into your 10th season with the Orioles. Kind of amazing that you've been here that long. You debuted with the Orioles opening day of 2008. And the last 5 years, very competitive, 3 playoff years out of the 5 and competitive the other 2.
You know.
But no World Series. Now, you mentioned this at FanFest the other day. It's good to be competitive, but you want more. Explain that.
Well, I mean, what's the point of just being competitive? I mean, cool, be good. I mean, all right. No one wants to just be good? No. I mean, you said everybody, I mean, people tell me, oh, I want a statue of you up there. Except some people, not all. I want a statue, and, you know, hopefully they'll make a statue up there. There's only one way to get a statue. That's to win it all. I mean, and don't say anything before that. If you don't win it all, ain't no statue, ain't no. I mean, you can get that little plaque over there on that wall, the Maryland State Hall of Fame, something like that.
The Orioles Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the Maryland State one, too, I think.
Oh, okay.
My father-in-law, Gene, he's – so it would be cool to have that, Maryland State Hall of Fame. I mean, if that's bad, but if you're a good Orioles player, maybe the Orioles Hall of Fame, but you're talking about a statue? I mean, you got to do some incredible things, and one of them is win. And, you know, I think that – And he said, this is my 10th year, so it's kind of like, you know, my own personal dynasty with the Orioles, and it'd be great, you know, with the last 2 years left to grab a championship. That'd be pretty cool to see, you know. I don't know all the streets downtown, but I know they've been renovated for the F1 races and stuff, so that'd be cool to have a parade. I mean, the Ravens had a great parade back in 13. Why not have one of ours in 17?
Well, that certainly would be good. Now, I know how much you value defense. You do have the 4 gold gloves, and it's something that you really do care about as much as you're hitting. And another comment you made last week was you really feel the defense needs to tighten up a bit. And I was looking over the possible lineup today, and there are very few open spots, at least as you know, we chat right now. Where would you think it would be helpful to improve the defense, and how might the Orioles be able to go about doing that when you look down and just about every starter from last year is back?
Well, I know. That's the thing. It's, you have who you have, and there's nothing against who we have. It's just since you have who you have to go with what you have and be as good as you can with what you have. And like I said, there's no flack to anyone else, but when you had me, Markakis, and McLeod, me, Markakis, and Beaza, let me know what happened. I mean, you see over in Boston, when you got Bradley Betts and, you know, when they have Young out there, when they have Benatelli, I'm sorry if I said his name incorrect, Benintendi. Yeah, you look at Tampa, the athleticism that they have with Kiermaier, Souza, whoever they put in left field, with Matuk, Jennings, all the way to his release. Then you go to New York, Ellsbury, Gardner, who won a first gold glove. I'm so proud of that. I mean, I love that. I love how he plays. And then the right field, I mean, it's easy right field to play. So Beltran has some bit of relax over there, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm just saying, it's just you have to improve the defense. I'm not saying it's no flack against anybody. It's just you just have to have, you know, elite defenders. And that's just part of baseball, like I said. It's part of winning. And we don't have David Price, Chris Sale, you know, guys who are going up there and striking out 250 guys. And, you know, our defense is used, which is great. I love the way our defense flows. And, you know, we just need to improve defense. I don't know what's going to be implemented in spring training. I'm sure that they have something that they want to implement. Like I said, I am a team guy. I'm all ears to whatever they want to implement and whatever they feel will get us better. So I'm an employee. I'm not a boss of any sort. I don't make any decisions. I'm an employee with just a strong opinion. And that's all that's just my two cents.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about, you know, that need, that desire to win a championship, you know, Chris Tillman, J.J. Hardy last year of their guaranteed year. You, yeah. Manny, Zach, Brad, Dan, and Buck after 2018. I mean, we've asked other guys about this.
And Rock.
Do you feel like, hey, I'm day-to-day, but do you feel like that there are, like, that window's closing and there's any that sense of urgency, like, if we're going to do this, we better do this now?
Well, I mean, it's just the thing. We've been together for so long. I mean, Tillman's been an everyday starter since 10, I believe, or 11. JJ's been here since 11. I mean, we've been together as a group. Manny came here in late 12. We've been together as a group for a while. And, you know, I've seen all these guys' debuts besides JJ's. And, you know, we know each other beyond the game. And it's just like, you know, I think it's like any other core group of guys for any other franchise. You know, it's you want to win and you want to win together. You don't, you know, it's great to get the championship no matter where you play. But I mean, when you've been around guys for a significant amount of time, you know, it's you want to win for each other. And I know all the guys had this burning desire to get it. And like I said, it's just the small missing pieces that go along to the puzzle. And, you know, like I said, the beautiful part about it is, you know, our owner has been willing to spend some more money, especially at the break, and bring some more trades and be more creative. And that is something that, you know, like I said, Orioles fans have been mad about, frustrated with for some previous years. But, you know, the last few years has proved that, look, if we're in it at the break or something like that, you never know. That's why I always ask you guys, ask me at the break. How are we doing at the break? You know, if we're doing good, hey, then it's time to, you know, it's time to see what we can pull off. If we're not, then it's time to see what we can pull off in a different way, right? So, you know, it's a business. You know, you got to understand that. So I think Buck's fire, Dan's ability to orchestrate Rock, praise to you for having to follow him. And and trying to get through to him and trying to get, you know, a call back and text back from him and all that stuff. Praise to you, because I'm sure that is a treacherous job.
Hey, I show up and talk every day.
Oh, man. But, you know, when if we're in it at the break, they're going to do something. If we're not, they're going to do something. So
all right. That's a good point.
All right. Hey, I
look at it like that.
All right. I brought up Matt Weider's name earlier. Have you got a chance to talk to him at all? Are you surprised he's still on the market? And do you see any scenario at all where he could still come back here?
I have not talked to him. You know, I was supposed to go somewhere in an event and see him, but I didn't end up going to the event. I haven't talked to him. I'm surprised that he's still on the market. Like I said, this free agency is weird. You know, three years ago, everybody thought, you know, if Weider gets free agency, he'll go to Atlanta. That didn't happen. You know, it's weird for so many guys on big league and minor league level. There's so many guys that are just out there, which is surprising. Obviously, you know, there's still a few weeks left of spring training, and, you know, there's a lot of transactions that are going to transpire, you know, that aren't going to be publicized, obviously, but it's different. You know, it's a different feeling seeing the people in the offseason, seeing free agency, seeing how slow it is. The winter meetings are usually the haven of everything. The only suspect is, I think, he probably signed before that. So, yeah, I don't even know what happened in the winter meetings because it wasn't as significant as previous years. So, it's crazy. It's scary being a free agent. Glad I don't have to see that for a couple of years, possibly.
Now, Adam, it's well documented the style that the Orioles play. It's a play for the big inning. It's use the long ball, and that's fine because there are enough players up and down the lineup to hit the home runs. Do you enjoy that style since you're very much a home run hitter? I mean, you have six straight seasons with at least 25. You've had a couple of 30 home run seasons. I understand that the downside of that is that if you don't get it, it's tough to score runs. But you're in scoring position in the batter's box, most hitters that come to the plate for the Orioles. Are you okay with that as that style?
Well, I mean, sometimes you got to look at things as it is what it is. We're gonna hit some home runs. I mean, we're going to hit a lot of home runs. That's just, look down the lineup. You got some big guys. You've been around us individually. We're some big guys individually, so. I mean, power is definitely a part of our game, but I think we need to increase the athleticism of the game. You know what I mean? Look at the sheer athleticism of the game. We're talking about all these sabermetrics. The sabermetrics goes to the athleticism of the game. I mean, the John Jahas of the days playing outfield is over. The Jose Canseco's of the days of playing the outfield is over. You gotta be, you know what I'm saying? You see it. All these guys that come up through all these organizations, like they're 22, 23, and they're able to move like the wind in the outfield, throw, and just do everything else. And obviously, at the batter's box, starting to figure out the major league way of hitting. But, you know, you got to present athleticism in this game today. And offensively, you know, we have the guys to do it. Like I said, we just have to do it. It's not about, you can talk about it all day. Oh, we got to do this. We got to, like I said, you got to. Between them lines, we have to do it through 162. Is it going to be easy? Nope. Is it going to be hard? Yep. So let's just, like I said, talk to me at the All-Star break. Let's like the number one thing is get through spring training healthy. That's the number one toughest thing is get through spring training healthy. And then talk to me at the All-Star break.
If you had to predict right now, who is the primary leadoff hitter on this team next year? And I assume they're already on the club because anybody that comes in now, I would assume, is going to be more of in a part-time type role. Who's the leadoff hitter?
Adam Jones.
I don't know the lineup, to be honest with you, so I'll do it. I don't care. Only thing is we're going to have to work out something with the league and get me some time to get to the batter's box because I play center field. I'm big. I'm tired because I run the ball. So there's going to have to be something that has to happen where I get like 3 minutes instead of whatever 2 minutes they allow. I need like three because I'm tired. That run is long and I'm big. I'm bigger than all the other center fielders. So tired. I'm older than all of them. So and these legs, they're not necessarily tired, but let me get my own win.
Right.
Finally, last week at FanFest, there was a touching moment. You agreed to do one of the fan forums with a youngster, and the youngster was Mo, the 11-year-old from Glen Burnie, who was blind and is a regular on the Scott Garso show with Scott and Jeremy Kahn. And he really took to you, and you really took to him. Tell us about that. I've been at a lot of charity things with you, so I know how genuine you are when you go out there. What was that moment like for you with that young fan who really enjoyed meeting you and being with you?
Well, Kristen, who's probably right next to you smiling right now. Is she Jesus?
No, she's not here. She's a no-show type.
Oh, she said she was there around you guys.
Amanda's here, though. Amanda's here, but no Kristen.
But she told me the story, and I was like, what? Because, I'm in California, so I can't listen into the show. And that sounds like a super creep, and I have, like, all the radio stations. That's, like, real weird. Gene, that's you. That's Gene. Gene, I hear you right now. I know you listening. That's you. You listen. You got all, like, 9 different things going on right now in your house. I don't even want to know your electricity. She told me about it, and, like, how he calls into the show, picks out scores. And I'm like, he's blind, right? Obviously he just listens to the games and listens to the games. His senses are completely different than mine. You know, you take for granted a lot of things in life sometimes. Like I said, everybody understands when you're frustrated. And then you see, this kid who's blind and just sitting there loving sports, listening to the Orioles, but not just the Orioles, all sports, knowing other games, knowing other facets of other sports. That's impressive to me. I'm talking about, like, being able to, just use his other senses and his other interests. And he can be down. I'm sure he's sitting there, what other sports is on? What other events can I listen to? And I'm sure he knows a lot more than baseball, basketball, football, hockey. I would love to pick his brain.
Well, that was it really was a wonderful moment. I hope fans got to see the video. I did watch it, and Jeremy did bring Mo by the FanFest forum stage to meet him. So that was a nice moment. But, really job well done by you. And again, I've been at a lot of
Manny
those things with you, and I know it's genuine. What's that?
Yeah, Manny did a great job.
Yeah,
also.
You're right.
Yeah, Manny understands that stuff, too. Manny understands the value of first off, where you come from, hard work, and giving back and understanding that, look, and you, the Saint can't take this for granted. You have to really put your time and effort in and take what you have. You got to take your thing with a grain of salt and some humility.
All right, well, Adam, give our best to Audie and the guys and the pup. I heard the pup barking in the background there, so everything sounds like it's going. We'll see you in Sarasota. Rock before me, but a couple of weeks before we get it going again. Thanks so much for joining us. It was fun.
Anytime.
All right, that's Adam Jones joining us, and he really does make some good points. He doesn't just talk. He's thought it out, and he has ideas about where he's going to go. We have to break. We're a little behind. Oliver Drake will be next when we come back. Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan. And welcome back, everybody. And don't forget, opening day now is just 2 months away. So plan your Birdland summer. Secure your Orioles full or partial season ticket plan. The season plan members at every level enjoy huge savings over the cost of single game tickets, plus exclusive orange carpet benefits, including baseball's most flexible exchange policy. You get access to opening day and more. Partial plans come at a variety of price points, and they're the best way to lock in your spot for all the action of the upcoming season. Get your seats now. Visit Orioles.com or call 888-848-BIRD. I met a fan at FanFest last week, Rock, that had just come from the group sales table for the Orioles. He bought the Sunday plan. He's got 13 games. They're all Sunday day games, and he's thrilled. I mean, that's absolutely
perfect.
It's
a great deal.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones now. Welcome in Oliver Drake. Oliver, we appreciate your patience. Now, are you back in Worcester, or have you snuck out to Florida already?
No, I actually just got to Florida last night, so I'm down in the Sunshine State enjoying the weather.
Well, that's a good veteran move for a guy who just turned 31. Now, the obvious question is, you're a native of Massachusetts, so Patriots fan, are you looking forward to this game they have coming up on Sunday?
Yeah, I am a Patriots fan, so I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, I bet you are. Oliver, tell us about how you're preparing to go into this year, because as Rock and I continue to look at the roster, and it does change from time to time, but we both agree that five spots in the bullpen are spoken for when you got Britton and Hart and then O'Day, Brock, and Givens. But that leaves two precious spots, and you're certainly in the mix because of what you bring. Is it difficult to go into it knowing you have to earn a spot as opposed to getting ready for the season?
No. I mean, I've always come in knowing that I kind of have to earn a spot. So I'm coming into this spring training just worrying about what I control. And, you know, I spent a lot of time this offseason making sure I'm ready for this time of year. So I'm going to go out there and compete and do everything I can to get one of those spots.
What did you do, and was it different from your usual offseason routine that you say you made sure to make sure you're ready?
I didn't change much as in the terms of strength and conditioning. I just really spent some time focusing once I started throwing. I was able to be pretty consistent last year at the end of the year, commanding my fastball and throwing my split finger for strikes. And I just want to make sure that when spring comes, I'm able to do that again.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure you're now out of minor league options. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Is that an advantage for in your mind as you go into this competition? Is it a disadvantage, or is it something you've never even really given much thought to?
I really haven't given much thought to it. You know, I'm going in the spring knowing that if I'm going to get a spot, I'm going to earn it. And, you know, I have to go out there and pitch well and, you know, show the coaching staff that I belong in the big leagues, and that's how I'm going to get it. I don't think I'm going to make that team just because I'm out of options or, you know, any other way than earning that spot.
You're talking about being more consistent down the stretch. Let's look at some of these numbers. I've got you in September and one October appearance, two earned runs in 11 and a third innings, two walks, 14 strikeouts. Certainly a different pitcher than what we saw. I think you had gotten optioned after a game in Cleveland where you had kind of a rough outing. Again, specifically,
yeah.
What were you doing differently that made this happen?
I really just focused on getting ahead early in the count. And once I was comfortable doing that and throwing my fastball to strikes and quality strikes, not pitches just over the middle where the major league hitters can do some damage with it. But getting ahead, and that really helped, you know, my split finger. Guys would chase it out of the zone, and then I was able to throw that over the strike zone as well. And it was just a lot easier pitching like that. You know, you get ahead, throw strikes, get quick outs, and you kind of get the momentum going your way.
All right. Now, I'm glad, Oliver, you brought up the splitter, because your pitch is so unique. There's always a debate, what exactly is it that you throw, because there are two. There's the splitter, and then there's the forkball, which is gripped a little differently and has a little bit different, I guess, top-to-bottom movement, if I'm right. Explain to us, which one do you throw, or do you alter them like Kevin Gausman does with the changeups to get a different look?
I call it a splitter. A lot of other people and, you know, a lot of other coaches especially have called it kind of a forkball, because it's not your traditional split finger that's hard and kind of dives. Mine kind of tumbles and moves a lot up there. But, I mean, I fiddle with it. I have different ones that can kind of dive out of the zone that I'm looking to get a swing and miss or a strikeout. And then I have another one where I throw it over the plate and try to get it in the zone and hopefully get some weak contact.
So with you, and this is the case with every pitcher, fastball command, but I got to believe with you it's even more critical. If you can get ahead with the fastball and they have to respect that, that makes that forkball that much more effective.
Definitely. And, you know, it's just not the fastball. I have to be able to throw that split finger for strikes. But I'm not exactly a hard thrower, so when I throw my fastball, I have to be consistent with it and really locate it.
When we talk about the, we'll call it the splitter / forkball.
That's a forkball. We just decided.
Did we decide that?
Come
Is
on,
that official
it's a
now?
Forkball.
Was that a pitch that the Orioles were pushing for you to use more frequently? I remember talking to some people that said that there was a pitch that you were having a lot of success with in the minors, but when you came up, you weren't using it as much, and they were trying to get you to throw it more. I'm assuming it was that pitch. Correct me again if I'm wrong.
Yes, it was. We kind of looked at, in I think it was 15 when I got my first experience in the major league, We kind of looked at, I was pitching differently at the big league level. And, you know, it's one of those things I took away from what my strength was in the minors, and I had a lot of success throwing the split finger frequently, or the fork ball, as we're calling it. So I came up originally and just started throwing a lot of fastballs, and then we realized, let's do what I do in the minors and what makes me successful, and that is throw a lot of off speed.
Beyond that, what has been the biggest adjustment pitching at this level? I know you mentioned that you can't just throw strikes, they have to be quality strikes. You just kind of find that there are pitches that you have success with at AAA, AA, whatever, and then you come up to the bigs and it's like, uh-oh, I'm going to have to make some adjustments here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is just realizing how consistent you have to be outing to outing. And, you know, coming up, I'm very fortunate that I get to sit in the bullpen with guys like Zach, Darren, Brad, and Givens. Like, you watch them go about their business, and every time they throw, they're focused, they're locked in. Warming up to go out to the game, like, you see it, they're hitting their spots, they're locked in the bullpen. And it translates once they get out there to the game. And, I mean, it was a big thing realizing, you know, you can kind of get away with not being so focused every time you are on the rubber in the bullpen or in the game in the minor leagues. But when you get to the major leagues, every pitch matters.
Now, you were a 43rd round pick back in 2008 when you elected to leave the Naval Academy. So you were brought along somewhat slowly. And I was looking at your minor league numbers overall, but in particular your AAA numbers today, 33 saves, a career 1.85 ERA in 90 career games. Now, that tells me you have nothing left to prove in AAA. And you mentioned before that you have to figure out how your stuff parlays and works at the big league level. Now that you have that strong finish that Rock alluded to, and you did pick up your first major league win last year, are you confident now that despite it's been an off season, so you have to shut it down and then build it back up, that you'll be able to do that when you get to camp?
Exactly. I mean, ending strong like that was a huge kind of confidence boost for myself. I always believed I could do it, but to be able to put together a nice run over, you know, an extended period of time, really helps with that confidence instead of going, oh, I had a couple good outings here and then a bad one. Whereas we're able to piece together multiple ones back to back, you know, it really helps with the confidence knowing that I can do this.
Now, last year when you were in AAA, you were for the most part a one inning pitcher. You'd get your three outs and then Ron Johnson would put somebody else in the game. Now, for the relievers on the Orioles, and we talked to Brad Brock about this and Michael Givens about this last week, unless you're Zach and unless you're O'Day, and even O'Day falls into this sometimes, you really do have to be able to pitch more than one inning, get more than three outs. And you did that 8 out of 14 games last year. So I got to believe it wasn't that difficult for you to adjust, but it's certainly different than what you had done in your minor league career.
Yeah, it definitely was. And a big thing that helped is when I got sent down in the middle of the summer, I went down and back to AAA, and RJ and, you know, the big league staff had told me, you're not just going to be a one-inning guy anymore, because every time I come up, you know, that's not what they need. They need someone who can go multiple innings, get more than three outs. And so I went down there, and I got an opportunity to work on that, because it is different going from just always throwing one inning, one inning, one inning, to when you have to go throw one inning, come in, sit down, and then ramp it back up. So it was nice. I got to kind of experience that and fiddle with what kind of my routine, what works for me in between innings, so that when I came back up and was asked to go more than three outs, I was able to do it.
As you were going, got back and forth, AAA to the bigs, did you find it was a relatively smooth transition going from Mike Griffin, your pitching coach with Norfolk, to Dave Wallace, the pitching coach with the Orioles? Were the philosophy similar, the approaches, personalities, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, basically, they just told me, do what you do, stick to your strengths, and that's what got you here, and that's what's going to keep you here. There's no reason to change what made you successful in the minor leagues. And so, like, it was good to have that kind of communication there.
Did you have a chance to talk to Roger McDowell yet?
I talked to him over the phone after he signed. He called me, and we had a brief chat. And then just quickly at FanFest and Casino Night this past weekend. So I'm looking forward to getting to work with him on the field.
Oliver, you're a unique player in that you were at the Naval Academy, and it looked like heading to a career in the Navy, but took advantage of the out after 2 years to realize your pro dream. But that's an honor to even be accepted at any of the academies. How difficult was that decision to walk away from that, knowing that could be a career and something you obviously aspire to, or you wouldn't have went in the first place, to try to make it to the big leagues?
I mean, yeah, it was an incredibly hard decision. My 2 years at the Naval Academy are something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. The guys I met there, the friendships that were formed, you know, they're going to last my whole life. So it was a tough one. Fortunately, I talked with a lot of people when I was weighing my options. And a lot of the people there at the academy, they sat down and told me, you can always come back if baseball doesn't work out. If you go give this a shot, and after a couple years, it doesn't pan out, you can come back, finish here, and then go about your career in the military. And so I was like, all right. I was like, this is something I've wanted to do since I was like a kid. So I'm going to give it a shot. And if it didn't work out, I was planning on going back. And so far, baseball's been working out.
Well, I had the chance to go to the Army-Navy game this year because it was in Baltimore. And it's such an amazing, amazing day. And what you were saying there, my dad didn't go to the academy, but he was in the Navy 4 years during the Korean War, was on an aircraft carrier. And he always used to say it was probably the best 4 years of his young life because of exactly what you said, the camaraderie. And even though you might not be with those guys, you still have the friendships, and I guess that's what matters.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's awesome, too. I get text messages and emails from guys, even while they're deployed, checking in, guys who I played with or lived with and met at the academy. And so it's awesome to know that they follow me and they keep up on it, and they all think it's cool. And it was real cool in San Diego being able to meet up with some of the guys who were stationed out there.
Did you send them all your baseball card?
A lot of them have that, or they have some autographed baseball. So.
Hey, before we let you go.
Is this your first time at the Army-Navy game?
No, it's the second time I've gone. My daughter, okay. Her husband, Brett, his dad is a colonel in the Army. He's a JAG, so she has better connections than I do. But since it was in Baltimore, I've gone two times, both times when the game was played here at M&T. So it was a thrill, and obviously I was rooting for Navy because of my late dad. But it was a good game. They just came up short.
Yeah, Buck recommends it.
If it was your first time, I was going to politely ask you not to attend again.
Buck said it's a bucket list item. He was able to cross off.
Yeah, the other time I was there, the Mids won, so it wasn't on me.
Okay, good to know.
Hey, I wonder if you could play scout real quick for us here. You know, Joe Gunkel was added to the 40-man roster, and he's a guy who could compete for, you know, a long relief type role, maybe the role that Vance Worley had last year. What have you seen from him? I mean, obviously, he's a guy that looks like he throws strikes. He doesn't walk a whole lot of guys.
Yeah, Joe's one of those guys, the more you see him pitch, the more impressive he is. You can see him throw one time, and you might not walk away impressed, but the more you see him pitch, you realize he is so consistent. He goes out there, he fills up the strike zone. He's got really good stuff, and guys can't square it up. And, you know, it's awesome to see that. It's awesome to have a guy like that on your team because you're sitting out there. He's filling the zone, getting quick outs, quick innings. And every time out there, you know what to expect from him because he's so consistent.
Well, Oliver, we're glad you made it to Florida safely. So did you go straight from here? FanFest last week, you were here for both days. And I guess Sunday, everybody scattered. Did you go home and then go down or go straight down?
I hung out with some friends. I got a former teammate of mine, Kenny Moreland, who we got drafted together, and he lives in Virginia. So my fiance and I spent a few days with him and his wife and their two kids. And then I stopped at Asheville, North Carolina, because my pitching coach from Navy is the head coach there, Scott Friedholm. And I stopped and saw him for the night and his family, and finally got to deliver him a signed jersey. So that was pretty cool.
Well, that's great. Well, we're all pulling for you, Oliver. I mean, if you make it on the opening day roster, I know you just turned 31, so it's not like you're a youngster trying to break it through, but the path you've gone is certainly unique, and we're all pulling for you. Thank you so much. It was enjoyable having you on the show, and Rock will be down there on the 11th. I'll be down later in the month before the game start, but I look forward to catching up with you when we get to Sarasota.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oliver Drake joining us. And real good insight. You know, because he's up and down, you don't talk to him all that much, but he really has an idea of, A, who he is,
right,
and, B, what he has to do to stick with this group. I like that.
I think there'd be the added maturity with the path that he's taken. That's included having overcome surgery, you know, missing significant time in the minors. He thought might derail his career. He was gone for a while. Orioles would re-sign him. And he, like I said, was it two earned runs and 11 and a third innings and 14 strikeouts in September and that once October appearance. He really came on strong.
All right. Now, remember, whenever you write about him,
yes,
it's a forkball.
It is a forkball.
It's not a
splitter. I'm going to go back and listen to the tape and make sure.
Forkball. He definitely said that. We'll take a break. One more segment to go. Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove Show. An hour-long look at baseball and the offseason with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles, 105.7 The Fan.
And don't forget about those group tickets. The 2017 season coming up, and the group tickets are on sale. You can create an event for your group that you'll never forget. Host your next group outing at Oriole Park. Discounted tickets for all groups as small as 15 guests and party facilities to fit up to 1,000 fans. Oriole Park can create a memory that will last for seasons to come. Plus, group leaders can earn a variety of incentives, including the opportunity to throw out the ceremonial first pitch. So to learn more, Orioles.com/groups or call 888-848-BIRD. A few minutes left on Hot Stove Baseball. Jim and Rock at Dempsey's at the ballpark. Now, I was going over what I thought the roster would look like today, and I right now have Trey Mancini in, which means if he is, no one else can be added. That's the way I'm looking at it, right? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, plus 4. Yeah.
Right.
Now, Dan Duquette even said at FanFest on stage last week that he's looking for another outfielder. And if Inuri Tavares, the Rule 5 guy, makes the team, he's the other outfielder. And I have Joey Rickard on the team also because he becomes the backup for Adam Jones.
Right.
Where do you feel, and we've been talking about this for weeks, where do you feel he may be going, Dan, to look for that other outfielder? And will it be more of a defensive pickup than it is an all-around player?
So if he adds another outfielder, someone's coming off between Tavares, Mancini, or Rickard on your list, correct?
Unless Buck goes with 10 or 11 pitchers,
right,
until he
which he did say,
yeah,
remember, breaking
right
camp, he said they could break with 10 right or 11 pitchers. So at least that could delay the decision of how
and
eliminate guys.
Out of that group, Flaherty's out of options, plus he's the backup for Hardy, so
right,
he has to stay.
Right. I mean, they want a defense-first outfielder, speed guy. It's just, if you look at the free agent market, guys are coming off every day. And these are minor league deals. Just since we've been sitting here, Desmond Jennings has a deal with the Reds, minor league deal reportedly. Chris Coughlin, COG,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
minor league deal with the Phillies now. Those were two guys that were possibilities. You know, Angel Pagan, I prefer Angel Pagan, but we're going to, Angel Pagan is still out there. Michael Bourne's still out there. But, you know, the list is kind of dwindling, and I don't know whether there might be somebody available in trade that we haven't even thought about at this point. And anybody they bring in, it's going to be a part-timer. I know what, you know, Adam has expressed improving the defense at the corners, and I agree with him. But you're going to have primarily Kim in left and Smith in right. It looks like right now if it's not Smith, when you have a lefty starter, it could be Trumbo.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have guys as late-inning defensive replacements maybe. Rickard, even a platoon or backing up as a defensive replacement, and whoever they can bring in. But there isn't somebody who's going to come in and be the everyday left or right fielder who's a plus defender right at this point. It's just somebody else, good glove for the later innings is what they're looking for.
If Tavares doesn't make it and has to be offered back, and we know Dan's track record with Rule 5
right
guys, somebody makes it just about every year. What about somebody coming up from the minor league system that can play just defense? You know, I mean, we talked about Cedric Mullins when Buck was here.
Right.
Do you go from Delmarva to playing defense in the major league? I mean, he's athletic. He's exactly what Adam was talking
right
about. But I don't know. I mean, Mike Yastrzemski maybe. He's got a lot of speed.
Right.
I've never seen him play defense, though.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he's a guy that can play center field, obviously. Mullins, you know, after being at Delmarva, is still too far away. Yastrzemski didn't have the big season where he was beaten down the door like we thought might happen. So they probably want him to at least start out in AAA, see if he's going to hit more. But, yeah, maybe that could be a guy down the road just because of the glove if they feel like he's going to be a plus defender. But at this point, they still want to bring somebody in from the outside, and they're not going to spend a lot of money doing it. So because after re-signing Trumbo and the raises they've had to give in arbitration, and they're going to be negotiating hopefully an extension with Chris Tillman, there's not a lot of money left to spend right now from the feeling I get. So I'm going to, you know, so it could end up being, again, somebody on a minor league deal with an invite. But, again, these guys are coming off the board every day now.
All right, we got about 20 seconds left. So next week you're dumping me, huh? After next week you're
gone? I'll be here next week, but I'll be holding a suitcase because I need to start packing. So.
Well, you got a week. You can get that done.
That's true.
Now, when I get to Florida, well, you're going to be on by phone when I'm still here. But when I get there, you're going to join us. We'll do the show from the complex as we did last year. And that was a lot of fun.
It worked out well.
We could get guys coming in. So that'll be great. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We thank Adam Jones and Oliver Drake. Stay tuned next on The Fan. The Mark Turgeon Show comes your way. And Rock and I will be back with you next week. Another edition of Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan.